Hey folks, Dr. Brian King here. I am back in Dallas once again with Sarah. How are you, Sarah?
I'm tired.
She's tired. Many of you who follow us, you know, you of course might enjoy the podcast, and Sarah is my favorite co-host. But there's a little secret about our podcast. Sarah doesn't actually like doing them.
I don't.
Why don't you like doing the podcast?
You know, I think it's just mostly when I'm done working at the end of the day, I'd rather do other things.
Yeah, you're so selfish. not helping your partner with his creative pursuits, you know. And for that reason, we're getting a divorce. That's it.
Yeah, that's the ticket that did it.
All right, well, no, we're not really getting a divorce, but we are doing a podcast today with a lawyer in the Philadelphia area who has written a book called The Dirty Secrets of Divorce. It was that one right there. She was nice enough to send us a copy, and it's an awesome book, and it's very funny. It's full of pictures and cartoons, and you had a week to read it, Sarah, before this podcast. Did you get it done?
I've got paid work.
Hey, how about I continue paying the mortgage? How about you consider that the paid work? Anyways, our guest today is a lovely, the very interesting, the very funny Miss Renee Mazur, everybody.
I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. Blues, women, and blues. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere.
So, you know, you saw our intro, right? So you can clearly see that we are in desperate need of your services.
No, actually, I can tell that you guys really love each other, but I would love to tell you about why if you did need my services, it would be like way better than anything else you could do.
Well, first of all, before we get into your services, because I don't think we're actually going to, you know, hire you for a divorce, but...
You're so cute together, by the way. You look like the happiest, cutest couple ever.
Well, thank you. It's entirely a facade. No, tell me, what prompted the book?
All right, so my divorce was so harrowing. It became part of a play on human rights violations. And I've been writing that book as a campaign to free my son from this residential treatment center that he was being trapped at due to family court. And I'm writing it, and I start investigations that are a way to get my son home. They blew up an abuse and neglect findings at this institution they trapped my son at. And I'm like, well, you know, if I'm going to do something with this and I want to get everybody's attention, I've been doing comedy for my entire career. So I'm like, okay, if I can make it funny, then I've got a chance of breaking through and getting attention to what the heck is going on to our family court system. Mm-hmm. And my mentor from I did vocab programs with song stories, poems, and comedy. And my mentor for that was the founder of the Princeton Review. So once I was like done with the nightmare of, you know, getting my son home and everything, he's like, Renee, start a business that keeps people out of family court and then write a book, but don't sound bitter and don't talk about corruption. Like, tell people to come to your business and you should franchise this all over the place. It's really fun, you know, way to get divorced that includes date coaching and stuff. All right, so I'm like, I get off the phone and I'm just like, huh, like, how am I going to write a book about family court that's not bitter? I'm bitter as hell. Like, I wake up bitter. I'm bitter all day long. The whole thing is corrupt. Like, there's nothing to talk about if you don't talk about the corruption, because it's straight out corruption, in my opinion. I won't lose my law license by, you know, making statements that aren't my opinion. But in my opinion, everyone's getting paid off and there's kickback schemes and the lawyers are best friends with the masters and the judges. Like, so that's what it was. I got off the phone and I was like, okay, I can't write a book about family court that's not bitter or talking about corruption. But I bet if I do it funny, I can get away with that. And ta-da, I wrote like comedy poems for all of my vocab words when I was teaching SAT vocab programs and doing SAT prep. And I just took the exact same method that I'd done for years and years in the studio of writing funny poems that rhymed And I'm just like, okay, let's go. And it literally wrote itself. I believe it was channeled through God or the universe.
Yeah.
Because it wrote like, you know, in really fast.
So so you do have this background in comedy. You also are an attorney. Which came first?
So that was the really interesting thing about the whole thing. And I'm like, I've gotten spiritual through this. Cause like when your kid is like literally like trapped in Utah and then Massachusetts,
oh, man.
I was literally was like secular Jew. And then all of a sudden I've got like all these evangelicals who lost their kids to these places and Orthodox Jewish women. They're all like talking about the Psalms. And I started like, you know, reading the Psalms in the middle of the night and getting spirituality. And so basically I went to Wharton and then I went to Penn Law School, but I went to Penn Law School because after Wharton, I started working and I was like, I really don't like working. I want to go back to school. School is way better than this. So I took my GRE and my LSAT because I wanted to be a psychologist, honestly. I thought that would be way more fun. And I didn't really know what law was.
You know, it's funny. I wanted to be a lawyer, and then I ended up getting into psychology somehow along the way. So it seems like we both were given wrong information at some point.
Oh yeah, like you know what the thing is? I didn't know how boring law was until I'm in law school, and this is actually totally true. So I do really, really well on my LSATs, and I get into an Ivy League law school. I got into two Ivy League law schools, and only applied to two Ivy League law schools, and I got all these scholarships, and I'm like, you know, I must be really good at law. Like, that must mean I'll be a great lawyer because I did so well on my LSATs. And I go to law school without having any interest in law whatsoever. Just thinking like, oh, who turns down Penn Law School? And then I get done Penn Law School and I remember my graduation from Penn Law School and we're at the dinner and my father was a doctor. And at the graduation dinner, I'm like, you know, I really don't like law. I don't think I'm going to practice. And this isn't funny, but it's true. And it kind of leads to everything. Literally, like a month later, he has an aneurysm. That's not funny. But like what happened was he was like the only person to ever survive a double bleed aneurysm. Wow. So like all through, you know, like a month after I graduate, he's in a coma. It lasts for like years where he's in the hospital and he's really sick. And by the time he comes out of the coma, I worked at the EPA for a couple of years doing EPA stuff. And the people there are great, but like law is really boring. I mean, I was like literally my job was treatment centers, water treatment centers and EPGRA, like filing your, you know, hazardous materials forms or whatever. And, yeah. And I'm just like, you know, he comes out of the coma and by then I'm literally teaching SATs at my kitchen table. And I'm like, you know what? I should do something that makes him feel a little bit better about all the money he spent on Wharton and Penn Law. And I'm like, well, I have the Wharton degree. Let's use that because law was just so awfully boring and so not my personality because I don't like to fight with people.
Yeah.
And when you're at the EPA, every time you call someone and they answer the phone, they like scream, F, you know. I'm like, hi, it's your name. And they're just like, ah. So that was that. But the people were great there when I was there. My coworkers were really nice and they held my job open for a really long time. But when my son was born was basically when I stopped doing that. Then I started doing SATs and I started doing all this comedy stuff. And that went great. Like I got my audio SAT comedy program into Costco nationally. So I'm like doing great. And then I do another version of it that's like on the racier side. Cause I'm like, if I can make this like a Sex in the City episode, what a great business that'll be. Yeah. I'm like, oh, you know, on this track. And I'm like, my comedy's getting better and better. And I'm like, you know, that's gotta be like, you know, sex sells. Shouldn't say it that way. But like, and it wasn't like, that's it wasn't true. Like too much. It was just like, you know, like a Sex in the City episode of level of comedy for adults. And then I hit Family Court. And all hell broke loose, all nightmare. You know, I had to change my brand. I'm like, I don't think that's a good brand for custody court. So it all like, you know, it's kind of like I put the kibosh on all the creative. Mm-hmm. And then I was just stuck in family court, losing my house, losing, you know, my kid. My older son during that time that I did raise all the way to 18 became a Disney star and then went Ivy League. So I'm like, I think I proved my parenting.
Yeah.
You know, and then I still, you know, for my younger son, they still did this. So as I'm going through it, as it's the spiritual thing, we'll get back to that. I'm like, you know, I have an Ivy League law license, like degree, and I let my license lapse, but I'm like, I should do something with that. That's God's way of telling me, like, there's a purpose for all of this and it's all going to make sense. So that's when I'm like, I'm going to write books and I'm going to be able to write a book about family court as, you know, with Esquire after my name, so I can talk about it as a lawyer. And in terms of family court, I think I know more than just about anybody, because I was, after they bankrupted me and turned my life into a living nightmare, it was pro se mostly. So I had a ton of family court experience and I lost nonstop. So I have no success. But, you know, I was like, okay, let's become the lawyer again so I can, you know, do my comedy as a lawyer on family court.
You know, it's funny because, like, in my comedy, I have a joke that I often talk about I have a doctorate and this is what I do for a living and how proud my parents are of me, you know, and like talking, you know, like, oh, you doing what with your degree? And then they just kind of die. And then it's the whole thing. But it doesn't seem like it was that sort of it was more of a natural progression. You know, the comedy came out of necessity. And then, of course, you know, the various steps that you hit throughout your career. But so divorce attorney, you're not a divorce attorney. Is that even a real specialty?
I think that actually, if you start practicing family law, you lose your soul. Like, I've yet to find somebody in that field that still has compassion and a heart and hasn't lost their soul. So yes, it's a field. And, but what I did was, and this goes back to the founder of the Princeton Review, his name's John Katzman, he's an angel. And him saying, you know, start a business that keeps people out of court and, you know, and then write the book and have it turn into the lemons into lemonade thing. I actually wrote an article for Mensa on that exact topic, like turning lemons into lemonade. And the idea that this is all going to turn into this amazing career. And I'll be like, oh, I'm so glad that I went through that freaking hell. Yeah. Now I can, you know, help other people. But my method is totally different. And I figured I identified all the problems that were creating the nightmare for everybody. And what happened was, because my case became very public, partly because I was going to everybody in the universe. Like, I actually started investigations that got my son's last institution in big trouble, because I was like literally like going to everybody. So people all over the country knew my case, knew me, and all these women were calling me, and I became friends with a lot of guys who had horrible cases too. So it's not like I'm just like, you know, all women on this. I'm like, you, no matter who you are, if you go to family court, it's a profiteering nightmare, and they are going to take everything from both of you that they can, and just churn it endlessly. So I was seeing all of these women, all of these cases, all of these guys, and understanding where the profiteering was and why these cases had turned into a nightmare. And there's money trails that I know about, which are way not funny. So it won't be your podcast. It's not like appropriate. I'll get like really dark.
It's all right. It's not always laughs on the On the Road podcast.
Scared to reveal those.
So without spoiling your book, okay, because one of us didn't do our homework apparently. But without spoiling your book, what are some of the dirty secrets about divorce that people should know about?
Okay, well, one thing I started is the billable hour thing is just like horrific. And think about it. You put people on the honor system. Like, you know, you go to your lawyer and they're like, it's $25,000 retainer. And they seem to use that up in like 2 weeks, right? And you get these bills with, you know, the what they did, right? So studies have been done showing that like the bills are massively padded And so that's one of the secrets. And then you're like, who are these people? Because the people that I know who have been to family court seem to hate their own lawyers even more than their exes. Because, you know, they're getting the, you know, crazy bills and they're afraid to answer the phone because every time your lawyer's on the phone, you'll get charged hundreds of dollars for that phone call. Right. And then they'll be like, when they lose or something goes wrong, like they blame you. So I talk about in the beginning of the book, like I felt like I'd been tied up and whipped while it was $525 an hour. My bank account was stripped by one of my lawyers. Right. So it's sort of like one of the secrets is like everyone I know is like their own lawyer seems to be making deals with the other side or churning things to make it worse. And so I also, as I'm doing this, there's a part of me which is like, should I be practicing law? Should I have, you know, done it different? Because I had a great career and then I went broke and I'm like, I have a degree that I should be able to make money in, you know, but like, ew, I'm not practicing law thing. And so I had seen a book that came out talking about how lawyers were the most depressed or the highest suicide rates and stuff. And so another thing when I was writing this book is I went and I got those quotes. So what I did was I talked on like the left side of my book with the copy is poetry that's funny, that rhymes, but basically is like in your face family court, you know, like it's my F you to family court. So I like say all the like shocking things that are going on, but no one would really believe me if I just say that, like, oh, you're a psychologist, the thing about Dutton's research on psychopathy, like that lawyer's Frank second next to CEO yeah. psychopathy, whatever, right? You know, like I can say that, but if I put in the research, which I did, so what I did was I talked about what's going on in family court on the comedy side. And then on the right side of the book, I have quotes from really credible sources that back up everything I'm saying. And I was really careful to put in every side of the political so that it wasn't like, you know, what I personally watch is like Jimmy Dore or whatever, right? But I don't want to be like, I'm, you know, just giving it because these are my perspectives as this political thing, right? So I put in Lou Dobbs and I put in Cornel West and I, you know, and it was like a complete spectrum of people talking about the facts that backed up what I was saying.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that psychopathy measure. You know, I reference that a lot. In fact, I used to talk all the time about like psychopaths are leaders. You know, psychopaths yeah. are. It's really interesting. I don't appreciate how pervasive that personality is and this field. You know, I don't know what it is. I always tell people that psychopaths don't have much of a stress response, and that's true. They don't. So. Given that law is a very stressful occupation, and maybe sometimes the work that you have to do would be too stressful for the average person. You know, it really does take somebody who can just handle it and not like react. You know, someone with like no emotions. You know, to be able to do something. And it sounds like you have firsthand experience with just some of the horrible things that they do to make money in the system. Yeah.
What I saw with the judges was shocking, that there's no oversight. Oh, yeah, that's another, the dirty secrets of divorce.
Huh?
There is no oversight of our judges, and like no real oversight. You know, you can say that you can appeal. My appeal got blocked. And the conduct boards, I think, are all compromised or, you know, that's my own opinion. But no one will say good things about our conduct boards. I have, you know, from friends, too, conduct board complaints that were sent in that were beyond shocking and denied. Mine were beyond shocking and denied. I actually put in a complaint when I was pretty sure that my son was somewhere in a hospital and we couldn't find him. And I sent that to a judge. And then I wrote to the conduct board, like, I want to put you all on notice if something happens. And instead of oh my God, your son's in jeopardy and something could happen. The lawyer for the conduct board, and I don't have this letter anymore, but I have emails back which confirm what I'm saying, even though it's not as good as having the actual letter. He said he threatened my law license. I just literally notified you that my son's in jeopardy. Your response is that it looks like the letter you sent to the judge is ex parte. I might be having to go after your law license. I'm like, I'm a mom who's worried about my kid. Like, what? And I wrote back, no, no. And I gave proof that I'd sent it to the other side. That's what I have. I do have showing that that happened or indicating that that happened. But that was nuts. And so,
yeah, I can only imagine. Yeah.
And also, after my son ended up in hospitals and was deemed a significant suicide risk and, you know, screaming for me every night, and I'm doing everything I can to get him home, my ex's attorneys and the judges were all keeping this going. And his testimony that, you know, in the custody fight, when he was already, I think, 15 or maybe even 16, was so good that it became part of Lundy Bancroft's play, which was co-written with Patrice Lenowitz, who are both like major names in the domestic violence field. It was that good of a testimony that it was used in the play. And the lawyers kept this going after he'd already been, from what I believe was a suicide attempt, or at least, you know, the institution was not taking good care of him. My son had been in intensive care for 4 days. And they kept it going. My emergency right after intensive care, you know, was considered stale because I'd written before he was in intensive care that he was in danger. Like, I couldn't believe what I was saying in the courts. And so what is that? And where are these people's souls? And, you know, and I'm always like, who, you know, what money were they getting? What, you know, who? And that's just my belief, because why would you do that? Or why would lawyers want to keep something like that going, knowing that you've already got a kid who's been in intensive care for 4 days. And then, in, you know, I think there were other hospital things related to suicide stuff. And what, you know, like, I thought I was living in Nazi Germany when I was dealing with family court. And I now know so many other people whose cases are similarly shocking.
We divorced.
I was. I didn't use a lawyer.
and you're smiling.
It's a smart move. Yeah, I don't remember. We didn't have any of these complications when you were going through yours. So,
yeah.
What's the phone number behind you?
Okay, so that's for my business. I actually, it's called thenasermethod.com if you want to find it online. But I decided to just, my business before was not too scary vocabulary, and I love that. And so I wanted to make lawn signs. So I put not too scary divorce, so people would know it was divorce. And I, today, for the first time, because I just got them, I put them up all over, because I have a friend who's from Sicily, and he owns like Sal's Pizza, Vito's Pizza. I just put them all these places today. And I'm like, you know what? I'm doing this podcast today. Let's just stick it up. So yeah, right. So that number is for my business. My partner is a bankruptcy attorney, so he's got like major experience doing the financial stuff. And I have, I do like all the outside the box stuff. Like, I get people's, I save people tons of money on their kids' activities. I do the custody stuff. I explain exactly what would happen in court if they ever were nuts enough to go there, and they never, you know. And my clients have been thrilled. It's just, it was just so easy to fix the problems and be like, oh, okay, if we do it this way, no one, these cases will be fine. And I've now done, I think it's 7 divorces, and every one of them was like awesome. And they're now all good friends of mine. I'm like, it's literally like, I'm really good at being friends. So I'm like, you know, like, and I tell my friends now when they call me, I'm like, oh, you need to pay me.
So you're.
Now I want all my friends to pay me for my business instead of just being my friend.
your approach, I'm assuming, is to try to reduce a lot of that expensive and terrible work that the lawyers were doing and the judge and everything that you went through. But then, does that mean that you don't get paid that much for your services, or you know, are your services still lucrative?
So it's a flat fee right now for your entire divorce at $6,000. And I'm still digging out, like, financially the dig out's crazy, because my son came home like a zombie, you know, and it's not his fault. He was brilliant, you know, A student before family court, won the Rising Star Award in his middle school. And I get him home and he is a zombie. I recommend anybody watch the program on Netflix right now. It's number one. That Level Step program is where my kid got sent to an exact similar place.
Like the Dr. Phil place or whatever it was.
I think Dr. Phil was connected to some of them. My kid was at Logan River Academy, where that's where I tried to get full custody of both of my kids, and that turned into me being threatened into the beginning Utah, because I didn't think he was safe here and I could not get the full custody. It's a complicated thing, but I have proof that I was threatened. And then as soon as he got out there, and I was like, this is less safe than home was, and I started balls to the wall trying to get him out. He's been vindicated on what that was, because when Paris Hilton's This Is Paris came out, the same people who ran Provo Canyon opened up Logan River Academy, which is where my son was stuck for about a year and a half. And then my efforts to get him out of there got him shipped to Massachusetts, where he was stuck for another 2.5 years. So he was gone over 4 years. And I spent all 4 of those years nonstop, emergency petitions, doing everything to get him home. I mean, it was like, I could not believe I lived in America. I was like, oh my God. And I'd been promised when he went out to Utah that it was only a 90-day program for he was on the autism spectrum, but super brilliant and high functioning. And then once he got out there, and I'd been threatened, I have proof. I wanted to raise him full time. I got my other son full time till he was 18. And I was doing everything to get him full time. But when I couldn't, it was nuts. It's weird for me to even be talking about this on a podcast, but I watched the program on Netflix. And then you can look online at Anonymous did a big campaign to go after Logan River Academy.
That's awful. I couldn't even imagine going through that. But that documentary on Netflix is kind of eye opening.
People will be like, that can't be.
That's not required for this podcast, so you didn't have to. But the fact that you didn't read this damn book, okay?
One job, man. It's funny. This book is not work. When you said I work for pay, I'm like, this is entertainment. I'm funny. I really am. Like, I might be like going from like funny to dark here, but that's why I'm like, I just want to like have fun. Wait till you see. Like, literally, like right after I did my Not Too Scary vocabulary, I did this thing called Wordgasm. And when you were talking about your parents and they're like really happy that you're a comedian, my dad died in 2006. And after that, Wordgasm came out and I dedicated it to my father. I was like, to the best father in the world. My brother was like, great, Renee, you dedicated Wordgasm to dad.
Have you ever encountered a couple that wanted a divorce over a podcast?
No.
Come on, man. It's a good book.
So I'll defend myself.
Yeah, I tried to make it so funny that nobody would look at it as work, but go ahead.
So I work with children with autism all day long, so I'm exhausted by this. If there's any consolation.
Yeah, and podcast should be fun. It should be like, you know, letting load off, you know, we get to meet somebody. And I'm just saying, you know, also she got mad at me for something else earlier.
No, I think we're not going to be needing a divorce attorney anytime soon. But I like what you're doing. I don't like the circumstances of your life that led you to this point.
Yeah.
You know, that's a terrible story you'd have to deal with, terrible ordeal. But some good is coming out of it. You're helping people. You know, you've helped 7 couples break up.
They're high conflict too. Like, everyone's like, oh, your method will only work for the couples that are totally getting along. No. And what's fun for me, honestly, is like, you feel like you're in a soap opera. Like, they're screaming at each other and my partner can't take it at all. It's just like, like quiet bankruptcy attorney, and it gets them all nervous. And I just keep thinking to myself, like, thank God you guys aren't going to lawyers, because this would cost a crazy amount of money if you're going to fight through lawyers rather than screaming at each other here. I'm like, yeah, go scream at each other. It's all good. And I like all my clients because they wanted to be my clients. So they can't say or do anything that I don't like them.
That's great. And I love the book. And you said, do you have another book coming out? Because I know you said you were writing a whole lot, but then it turned into something else. Is there another book coming out?
I have a whole lot of content that I already created. I was doing these Marketing Yourself for Love seminars for the whole time I was doing the vocab stuff. And when I was dating, I started writing comedy dating essays, and I'm like on the verge of like, let's get that one out.
If your other stuff is anything like this one, I highly recommend, and I really hope that you do put it out there, because I'd love to read it. It's this is good. I recommend everybody else pick it up. And do you have any more thoughts? Miss did the homework?
No.
Yeah. Do you want to get a divorce?
No.
All right.
We're not married, so.
That's true. True. I've been messing with this whole podcast. I figured out a long time ago that the key to not having to go through a horrible divorce is just don't get married. So that's what we've been doing, and it's working out so far for us.
It is.
And by the way, just so you know, I've done zero promoting of this book. This is like the very first that I even like said, you know what? Let's write back to some podcasters. And like literally, I started just doing like a Rotary. I started doing a seminar at Rotaries on how I started the investigations. And I did my first one of those recently, and it went amazing. So I'm like, let's go with that. But I haven't done the promotion because I've been so digging out of everything that happened. And, you know, I literally took me like 12 hours of tutoring a day to get my son through college. And that took years because he hadn't gone and had high school. So it's sort of the hole that Family Court dug for me was so great that I'm finally like, okay, got the book out. You know, the clients, it's like I've done no marketing. It's all word of mouth. So yeah. Now it's time to like go, go, go. And I want to do it into dating. Like, I know that sounds nuts, but I've done all these marketing yourself for love with my Wharton degree dating seminars. Mm-hmm. And I also did a 5-hour program on how to pick up girls and a long program on how to pick up guys. That's also like all created. But it was all just like wrong brand for Family Court.
Well, you know, when people get divorced, they need to meet new people. So it's just it's a natural progression, you know.
Or you learn how to date properly so you don't have to get divorced. I think that's a better idea.
That's true. Right.
So I want to turn my like divorce business into also like Saturday night talent shows so that people that are getting divorced can like go on stage and feel good about themselves and meet other single people. Because all my clients are like getting romance scammed, all the guys, not the women. That's so weird. Like that's half, because I help people after their divorce and I'm constantly getting calls, you know, from ex-wives. Like my husband is like getting romance scammed. It's going to stop him.
That's terrible.
And then I'll call him up and I'll be like, yo, like, let me help.
Renee, how can people find out about you and how can people find your book? And of course, they could probably call that phone number behind you for your services. But how can people find out about you?
Okay, so you can go to themazermethod.com. That's the website. It kind of sucks, but it gives you the idea of what it is. As I said, I've done like no marketing. And then I had like, I was like on this crazy budget over the summer. So for my birthday, I got like a little bit of money to get a website done for the book. And so I hired a kid in college who did my dirtysecretsofdivorce.com website. That kind of sucks too. I've been doing like some TikTok videos, but then I get like nervous about them because I'm like, okay, what if I say something that, you know, messes up my image for the other stuff I'm doing? So like what I really want to say, not so good, but there a lot of them are really funny. So you could see me there. That's on, I think, Dirty Secrets of Divorce, but I don't even know.
You're an amazing self-promoter.
I was, though, by the way, before Divorce Court and before Family Law and my like awful marriage, I got my products into Costco because I was really good at getting PR. But the world changed. Like, it's not like you just like make something, put it in a store, and then get publicity. It's all that internet stuff. And as you noticed when we started this, I don't even know how to get on Zoom.
Also, this isn't Zoom.
But I've got to get good at it. As I said, like there's been like so much derailment in my being able to get stuff off the ground. So we've been like, and by the way, my partner was afraid to take too many clients at first because he wasn't sure. But now we're like gung ho, which is why I put the signs everywhere because the cases have gone great. Oh, and there's testimonials. On one of those websites, I have a bunch of testimonials. And considering we've only done 7 divorces, every single person that I asked for a testimonial blew me out of the park. They were so good.
Awesome. That's awesome. Fantastic. Well, Renee, it's lovely to meet you. I appreciate the book. I'm going to make Sarah read it after the podcast. So then, and
I'll be reading the car tomorrow.
There
probably.
You go. Yeah, we're taking a little
bit
tomorrow.
Let me know what you think, because as I said, it means a lot to me since I haven't promoted it, so I have no review. Yeah, I was like, every time my friends write books, they're like, go on Amazon, write a review. I haven't done any of that. Yeah.
I'm really happy to be like your first media outlet for your promo. We can say that we were here in the beginning, so we were the ones. And
when you said you were a psychologist and you wanted to do this, because did you see how badly I trashed psychologists? Because court-appointed psychologists are as corrupt as the judges and the lawyers.
you introduce possibility for corruption anytime you have a financial incentive. You know, it's like, and there's that everywhere. But at any rate, it's been wonderful to talk to you, Renee. Thank you so much. And folks, those of you watching, listening, this has been another episode of On the Road with Dr. Brian. Sarah, thank you for being my podcast co-host. And maybe next time it won't. To potentially ruining our relationship. Anyways, thanks for watching. Bye bye. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. Blues, women, and blues. I'm here, I'm there, I'm everywhere. I'm an asshole. I'm